Windows down, music up. Get ready to hit the road in a new Chevy SUV or truck. Chevy is a name you know and trust. It's Chevy as American as apple pie and baseball. Check out the full line of Chevy vehicles at your local Chevy dealer. Chevy, drive Chicago.
I've been fortunate to interview a lot of people and to become friends with a lot of people, but I don't feel prouder of any friendship or know anybody that has had the kind of recording success that Les Paul has. Hey, Les, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great. How are you doing?
We're doing good, Les. It's so nice to talk to you a little earlier in the evening. Is it true that you came home from the Club Uridium and the sun was coming up on Tuesday morning?
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That was a long day for you because you got to the club sometime on Monday afternoon, right?
Yeah, it is a long day.
And you did two shows, and this was your birthday celebration where Lord knows who showed up. It's probably all a blur now.
Jose Feliciano, Tommy Emmanuel.
Oh, good.
We just had a bunch of nice, great guitar players and friends.
Good, good.
It was just wonderful. How are you guys doing?
We're doing terrific.
Yes. In fact, Les, in all the time we've known you, I know that along with your fascination with music, you're a curious man. You want answers, don't you?
Yeah.
He's worried now.
Okay. I want to give you the answer to something that you've probably been scratching your head about since 1 week ago when you got home and on your message machine there was this crowd of people singing happy birthday.
Yeah.
We were down in Florida. When we were down in Florida, we went to see Doyle Dykes in concert. Doyle brought us up on stage. We were talking about you, and we had the whole audience sing happy birthday. That was us who made the phone call with the audience.
And I never knew who that was.
It was just a drive-by happy birthday.
Oh, that was very nice. Thank you.
Well, I've got to tell you, too, that after the concert, a couple of guys walked up to me and their guitar players, and they were just giddy. We actually called Mr. Paul, and I said, yes. And then I said to Steve afterwards, for all they know, we called our house. And they don't know that we really called you, but it just made their day that we did.
It made my day, and I didn't know who it was.
Well, I said to Steve, you've probably had the same phone number for 50 years now, so Lord knows the kind of phone calls you get night and day.
I just never changed the number.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Because it's, why bother with trying to memorize a new one?
Right, it would be very difficult.
Yeah.
We were looking, every week, you know, that we go to redhotred.com, Chris Lentz's website, and we look at the pictures, and we saw the picture of you, and it looks like they formally presented you with your two Grammys on stage. Was that what was going on?
Yeah, I got the two Grammys, and the two that I had pneumonia, so I didn't go out,
right.
Go out there. And it was great. It was just great to get two more Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect.
Now, before you actually received a Grammy, weren't you and Mary inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame?
Yes.
So, again, this was before you got Grammys for the work that you did with Chet Atkins and then the Grammys. I remember, Les, it was early last year, and we said, what do you hope happens this year in your 90th year? And you said, I'm going to win me a Grammy this year. And you did, too.
And I didn't have the least idea how we were going to do it.
Uh-huh.
Had no idea. And we want to make an album now of the blues and country. Maybe bluegrass.
Uh-huh.
And put the old vocal tracks that I made back in Chicago.
Oh my God.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to making that.
Now, you had also mentioned that you wanted to have Tommy Emmanuel do some stuff with you on a country album. Is that still going to happen?
It would be great, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of great young guitar players coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's exciting. You know what you did?
Hmm.
The songs that you picked and played, the first four or five,
uh-huh.
were all that we did for the astronauts to wake them up.
Oh, my gosh.
And I just said, what is he going to do for the next one? Because I couldn't remember. We did another one, but I don't know what it was.
Uh-huh.
But you had How High the Moon,
right,
Waiting for the Sunrise, mm-hmm, Sitting on Top of the World. And all those songs we've played to wake up the astronauts in the morning.
That's a great piece of trivia. You've never told us that story.
Oh, well, I didn't ever ask.
Okay.
See, now there's a reason to continue to talk to you on the radio, Les.
God. I figured if I don't talk about an accordion, then I'll lose you.
Hey, you know, we got some great emails from folks who found out that you were going to be on with us a little earlier tonight, and this is a real treat for our listeners who have to go to bed, you know, to do something silly like work 9 to 5. And they'll hear when they wake up in the mornings that we've talked to you, and they'll email us and say, doggone it, can't you get Les on earlier in the evening? You're more of a night guy. You've been a night owl all your life, haven't you?
Yeah. I have the Smithsonian Institute, and they're here. We're doing a documentary. And it just washes them out because I say, well, we'll start at 6 at supper time,
uh-huh,
right after I have breakfast. And we'll work all night.
Oh, my God.
It's just like Sinatra. When they work with Sinatra, he does that same thing, you know.
Yeah.
He did all his recordings late at night.
So the folks from the Smithsonian foolishly go about and have a full day, and then they don't realize they're going to have a full night with Les Paul.
Yeah, now starting tomorrow will be the Library of Congress. They're coming in.
What?
Really?
Uh-huh.
Good grief.
And we're going to do our recording. We're going to transfer those over. All the discs are going to be transferred with laser. And there's no needle that touches the record at all.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, is this going to be for your audio recordings or for some of the Listerine TV shows? Or both?
Both.
Wow.
Both. We're doing the Listerine things now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so it's going to be great. The Listerine shows are just coming out fabulous.
And those TV shows will be available to the public for purchase, right?
Yeah.
And then what the Library of Congress does by doing these laser transfers, they are putting them in a form that will last forever and ever.
Well, maybe 10 years, you know. We don't know.
That's true.
What we think, like the CD, we think we found the wrong wheel or something.
Uh-huh.
And it's anything but.
Yeah.
And the longer we're pondering about how to do the restoration, we come back to the longest recording, or the oldest type of recording would be the best, with Back to the Phonograph record. We've gone around full circle and came back to that now.
Well, we've talked about this with some of our listeners before, that over in Europe in particular, there are a lot of listeners that are going back to vinyl, and they want that kind of pure analog sound.
Yeah.
That warm sound.
I'm doing that same thing with the hearing aids. I'm trying desperately to work with all the different manufacturers of their hearing aids with the problems that they're having with digital.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no matter how you slice it, I go back to analog as being a better sounding pair of hearing aids.
Uh-huh.
And let them do their switching and the stuff around the analog.
Mm-hmm.
To maneuver the different programs and adjusting levels and things of that sort.
I don't know if we ever told you, but a guy that we had in the studio that surprised us with his some of his knowledge of technology is a guy that you worked with on a special that you did for Cinemax many years ago, Waylon Jennings. And one of the things he said was that the best recording studios that he'd worked with were the studios that were a combination of digital and analog. He said that he felt it was best to take the best parts of both, and that's
what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific.
That's what they're doing. Just asked the question tonight to the Smithsonian, and I said, we're doing a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some advantages to the digitalness some great advantages to the sound with analog.
Now, what is, exactly is the Smithsonian attempting to do with you?
We're doing a documentary now.
Oh.
And so we're going back to the different people that I worked with, and sort of the life story of Mary and I, and and all of the different things that happened in my life.
Did they approach you, or did you have feelers out there?
No, they approached us.
Did they?
Mm-hmm.
And will that be something that we'll get to see on television, or again, will they package it and make it available?
They're talking about doing both.
That's great.
In movie theaters as well as on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
We'll take a break and get back with more with Les Paul. Stay with us. 720 WGN with Steve King and Johnny Putman. We have the pleasure of spending some time with Les Paul. Les, I don't know if I ever told you, but while that wasn't one of your biggest hits, I always loved that song.
Well, you know, thank you. That song we recorded in July or August. It was terribly hot, and we're in the basement in Jackson Heights, and we had to get that line just right. Look what you're doing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I got Mary with a blanket over her and a microphone so that we wouldn't wake the people up upstairs. And the next day, the guy looks at me like I'm a mean guy. What am I doing to my wife downstairs? Look what you're doing to me. And she had to sing it over and over and over to get that just right.
Oh, that's a great story.
It strikes me funny when I heard it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a funny story.
Well, you've told some great stories of the extent to which you would go to for the perfect recording. And I remember stories of, here in Chicago, when you would be recording, you'd think you'd have it in the can, and then all of a sudden a plane would go over.
Yeah.
Somebody would knock on the door of the hotel room, and you go, that's it, we've got to start all over again.
The world's waiting for the sunrise. The second number that you played before it got on, that was made at the Sherman Hotel in Chicago.
Wow.
That's where I made it while we were playing at the Oriental.
Just using that, was this the Ampex that you toted around?
We just towed it around, put it in the room, add a part, then go down, do the show of the Andrew Sisters, go back upstairs, and weave another little bit to the basket, you know. finally got it together.
And you played the Chicago Theater quite often, too, didn't you?
Yeah, that was super.
That's the theater they should bring you back into, Les.
Well, that's what I wanted to do. Yeah. I wanted to, said, when they launched this documentary, they said, where would you like to launch it? In Waukesha, in Milwaukee, in Chicago? I stop right there. Mm-hmm. Chicago's my favorite town. And so the producer, John Paulson, says, well, I'm from there.
Hmm.
And I says, well, where'd you live? And he said, over on Halsted. And I says, well, Jiminy, there's where I would like to release documentary and do a concert for the museum up in Waukesha.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to do that at the Chicago Theater. It's my favorite theater.
Boy, that would be wonderful, Les.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to do that.
The acoustics are great there.
Sure.
I mean, it's still the theater that you played in back then.
Yeah, and the Staten Lake was across the street.
Right.
Right.
And to go over there, and I'd hear Chick Webb and Paul Whiteman, and I'd go across the street, and I would hear whoever, you know, Eddie Peabody, whoever it was that I wished to see.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great to go from one theater to the other. And then they had vaudeville. It was on Stage Street, so you could go down there, and vaudeville was still around.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw the last of vaudeville.
Oh, boy.
So that was one of the big treats and surprises for me.
Yeah.
Where they stopped the show, sold the Cracker Jack, and they had all those raunchy little skits that they did.
You're raunchy by those standards.
Yeah.
Right, you know. Yeah, today it was nothing.
Oh, that's right. We're talking with Les Paul, and so many people have questions for Les. We got some great email. We're going to ask Les if he'll just hang in there for a little bit. We're going to get an update and come back and try to sneak in as much of his wonderful life as we can on the other side of midnight. Yeah, that's Les Paul, member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Jazz Hall of Fame, the Big Band, and the Grammy Hall of Fame. And just last year, he was inducted into the Inventors and Songwriters Hall of Fame. And in our book, if they had an all-around cool human being Hall of Fame, he would be the chairman. Les, stand up for us tonight. Les, I told you that we've got some questions from our audience, some phone calls and some emails from our audience.
And great.
I bet that song took you back a little ways, didn't it?
Oh, it sure did.
And the quality of that CD is unbelievable.
And you know what's fun about that is I get to hear you play acoustic. And there aren't a whole lot of recordings with you playing acoustic guitar.
That's right. We did two shows, one at 7, one at 11. The one at 7, I used the acoustical. At 11, I used the electric.
And this is back when you were playing with the Fred Waring Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And this is from the Fred Waring Show broadcasts.
Every night. And 5 nights a week. Yeah.
Was that like an East Coast, West Coast thing? Is that why
you did
two shows?
At 7, we did it, and then we rebroadcast the whole show again. Because the quality of the recording would diminish as the record played into the center. The quality would get worse.
So you just wanted to make things interesting by doing acoustic and electric?
Well, trying to find out which the audience liked the best.
Oh.
And Fred says, I'm curious why you draw more mail than I do. And I says, it's probably because of the audience out there writing in, don't play the electric is better, and there was a lot of controversy over which they liked better.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out that we finally voted on it, and everybody went electric, and we were happy to see that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the electric started in Chicago.
Well, that was my question. Weren't you in a club in Chicago when...
The Bismarck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 1934.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I played the electric, and the violinist stood on my cable. I walked up to the mic, and all the guts of my guitar were on the floor. That was on NBC. NBC says, no electric. No electric. So I had to bolt that thing down, and I had to train my violinist not to stand on my cable. Hey, I miss Chicago. I miss my friends. Well. Al Capone, Tui.
You know, I'm waiting for you to
say,
I'm waiting for you to say, the night that Al Capone walked into the club, I knew I'd made it.
Well, you know, Ben Siegel did walk into the club.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. And he asked for me, and I had just gone up to take a shower because I'd just come off of the show. And Johnny Hodges, who was from Chicago, a sports announcer,
mm-hmm.
he had been dancing on the dance floor, and he had a big scissors, and he cut my tie off.
Okay.
And so anyway, the Tui gang, we were all friends of all things. And the Tui gang would ask if I would play for them.
Uh-huh.
And so that we would go over to the Sherman Hotel, play for the Tui gang, and play for Al Capone.
So when you say gang, you mean a real gang.
The real gang. Yeah. With Vanguard and Tui and Tom,
uh-huh.
and the daughters. The whole thing.
Was it?
Did they check your guitar case as you walked in to make sure you weren't carrying a Tommy gun or something?
Yeah, I often think of that. But no, when you got off the elevator, the floor was covered with money.
Oh, my God.
All 20s, $100 bills, $1,000 bills, everywhere on the floor.
What?
I was so tempted to pick up some of that money. But I didn't think it was a good idea.
No.
I just left it lay there. They put it down there for a reason. And I said, I'm not going to find out what the reason is.
Ben Siegel, again, I don't know my mobsters all that well, but he was hanging with that group like Lucky Luciano and all those colorful characters.
Yeah,
right?
And Ben came in there and he says, if Les isn't here in a minute, he says, in the meantime, order all nine of us a glass of water.
Wow.
And so they all got a glass of water, and the minute was up, and he started walking toward the door. I came down the stairs, and I says, where is Benny? And Benny turned around. He was at the door. He says, bye-bye. That was it. That's the last time I saw him alive.
Wow. I got chills, though, just the thought of somebody named Bugsy coming in and asking for me. You know, immediately I'm thinking, do I owe anybody money?
Boy. Wow. Yeah, we opened the Flamingo. We left the Oriental in Chicago, and our next place was to open the Flamingo that next night.
In the days when you were playing in Chicago, when the mobsters were very big, did you ever play at any place where you were afraid or ever find yourself in a situation when you thought, gee, I wonder if we're going to get out of this one alive?
Yeah, I was in several of them. One was at the Lime House up on Howard Street.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing, and all of a sudden, the lights went out. And we didn't realize that they'd taken a machine gun and went right over our heads, took the top right off of the bass, took the where you tune it, just mowed it down.
Oh, my God.
And they took out all the lights. And they were raiding the next door, which was a gambling joint.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a bookie place.
Yeah.
And they also had all of us lie down on the floor, and they cleaned us out of everything, and out the door they went, and that was it.
So if you'd had a taller bass player, he would have been very dead.
he was at least be in the dark, that's for sure.
Oh, wow. That is wild. Talking with Les Paul, and we've said to our listeners this is a rare opportunity because when we usually have Les on, he's coming home after doing a couple shows at the Club Iridium, which he does every Monday night in New York, gets home and picks up the phone and unwinds for a few minutes on the with us on the radio. But this is a chance, we said, that if you wanted to sneak in a quick question, we'd let you do that, including some email for Les Paul. But the first person that called in is from some old stomping grounds of yours, Les. Pat is in Waukesha, right, Pat?
I am indeed, Waukesha County.
Great.
How you doing, neighbor?
I'm doing real fine, and it is an absolute privilege to talk to the greatest legend ever to come out of this here county.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
You are welcome. I am, and I actually do have one question. I was thinking about many years ago. I don't know if you remember, probably a quarter of a century ago, you contributed a list of your favorite guitarists to a publication called the Book of Rock Lists.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got the list right here, and I'm wondering if there are any names in the last quarter century that were not around that you didn't know of then that you might add now.
Well, what were they?
Oh, my goodness. They were, I can, Steve, with your permission, Alan, Johnny, I'll...
Sure.
Yeah, roll through the top few.
12 names. There was George Benson, Pat Martino, who I, if I'm not mistaken, he had, didn't he have an accident? He had to relearn his entire technique.
Yeah, he had a brain surgery.
Incredible story.
Incredible story. Al DiMeola, Jeff Beck, of course, James Burton, one of your favorites, right, Steve?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Segovia, Django.
Yep.
Jimi Hendrix.
Yep.
And one I absolutely do not know, I want to ask you about, Snoozer Quinn. And then three other jazz guys, George Barnes, Eddie Lang, and, of course, the great Wes Montgomery. But I don't know a thing about Snoozer Quinn.
Well, Snoozer didn't leave home. He was born with some handicaps, and so he would do most of his playing on the front porch in Mississippi. And Paul Whiteman is the one that told me about him, that he could play a whole song with one hand and how fast he was and how good he was. And that's where I learned about him and drove down there to meet him.
Oh, my gosh. Snoozer Quinn.
Yeah, Snoozer Quinn.
Did he make any recordings that we would...
He made a couple of them, yeah, which didn't do him justice, but... He was a very, very, very talented man.
Would I be correct in guessing, Les, that if you updated that list, that I would bet you would add to the list one of the people that joined you for your birthday celebration this year? Would I be correct in thinking you'd add Tommy Emmanuel to the list?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And there are many, many more coming up every day that play great, 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 you know. So there are too many to just mention, but and the great ones that were great then, I still feel I did pretty good in picking them because they still hold up now.
Yeah, George Benson is still doing great work.
Django Reinhardt, I still, every time I listen to something that Django does, Django just makes me smile. I love his playing.
Yeah, and he was you know, when he was in the back seat and we were in Paris, and he was in the back seat, and he tapped me on the shoulder, and the interpreter was a cab driver, and he says, Django asking you a question. He says, am I playing wrong? So he was questioning the way he was picking the guitar and fingering it. I says, it's coming out right, so you must be, you should just be happy about that, you know. Then he asked me if I liked hip-hop, and I says, no, I don't. And he says, but I do. And do you know that he turned to hip-hop? He disappeared for 2 years. And he just locked himself up and changed his way of playing till nothing sounded like Django.
Wow.
And probably was the last biggest mistake he ever made.
Yeah.
I just, on the internet, I typed in Snoozer Quinn's name, and there are a number of websites that recognize him.
Yes.
He was a very young man when he passed away, too.
Yeah.
Only
and,
in his
and
40s.
And so was Charlie Christian.
Yeah.
So was Wes Montgomery. There was some, Eddie South. I used to work with him on Sheridan Road.
Mm-hmm.
1929, we played the Regal Theater.
Oh, my God.
With Louis Armstrong.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was very exciting because Louis missed the last note, and he says, I'm going to stay here till I get it. And he played it 3 or 4 times. In the meantime, stage manager didn't know who the fellow's name was, so he says, go out and look at the marquee. And I went out there to see who I was playing with, and it was Louis Armstrong.
Oh, my gosh.
But I was with Eddie South. He and I did a duo together.
Mm-hmm.
And what a privilege it was to work at the Bar Ritz, which was at Sheridan, right across from the Sheridan Theater.
Mm-hmm.
On the north side of Chicago.
Huh. Wow.
But you know, one thing you said, Les, that I so agree with, that while there are a tremendous amount of really good players right now, if it's good, it's good, and you can go back and you can listen. Like every now and then I'll go back and I'll listen to some of the old Charlie Christian stuff. Man, was that great stuff.
Yeah.
Just if it's good, it's good.
You know, one of the interesting things is that we're playing in New York right across from the Brill Building,
mm-hmm.
where all the writers, the famous writers, had their offices. And I think of it over and over and over. In writing a song, they may have spent 6 months or a year just getting every note right to that song.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the musician comes up on the stage, and I thought of that Monday night, and he's playing a song and you have no idea what the song is.
Mm.
They leave the melody so far, and if you're going to leave the melody, you better have something as good as what the guy spent 2 years in writing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And if for some reason or another, fellow just has to show off how fast he can play,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily does it belong there, and so what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in some of the players had that great knack to put the right thing in the right place.
Well, and you
want that's what made Wes Montgomery so great and Benson so great and the great ones.
Yeah.
And you're one of those players too, Les.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I remember, I think we were at the Ryman Auditorium where so many guitarists were there to pay tribute to you. And in fact, we were fortunate enough to be backstage, and these guys were lined up outside the door, and they wanted a couple of minutes with Mr. Paul. And I got to play doorman and say yes or no if they could come in and see Les.
But I'll never forget it as long as I live. You two sitting right there in the front.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I will never forget that either.
Oh, boy. I believe, an interview we did or something?
Well, while we were back there, if you remember, because this was at Muriel Anderson's All-Star Guitar Night, the tribute to you at the Ryman, and we were backstage, and there was a British correspondent that came back to interview you, and that was the night, if you remember, Scotty Moore came into your dressing room.
Oh, good old Scotty.
Yeah. And he hadn't been well, and I remember he wanted to be out in the audience, he's such an interesting guy. He's just so unassuming. He says, oh, no, I don't think I could go out on stage and play with the caliber of people that are here tonight. And I thought, oh, my gosh.
But that was a night that I think back to Johnny's original point and your point, Les. When you came out on stage with your trio, you did so many things that just knocked us out. And, you know, we love you. But there were a couple things in particular. One was the way you do a wonderful version of Making Whoopee.
Yeah.
And just, you talk about using just a few notes, but making them count.
And just the right note.
And it's hilarious.
That's the key to the whole thing.
And the other one was, you did the most beautiful version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow that I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Monday night, the Smithsonian had the cameras on the audience, and they went to the different people in the audience that were crying.
Oh, my gosh.
And the tears would just roll right down their face. And it's a weird feeling to be up there playing something and knowing that you're communicating with the person in the audience.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about that crazy story that you've told us of the man you looked out in the audience and he was in a full body cast?
Oh, yeah, they brought him in by ambulance.
Yeah.
And he was on this board. And the only thing that moved was his eyes and the eyelashes.
Mm-hmm.
And they just propped him up next to me, and I played for him. And then he would blink his eyes.
Oh.
And that was it. He was strapped to the board. That's what he wanted to see, what he wanted to hear. And they brought him down in an ambulance, and then they took him out. Of course, he passed on.
Oh, that's such a powerful story.
Oh, boy, some of them are tough.
Yeah, I'm sure.
If I can, before we have to break for news, let me see if I can sneak in another call. Dave in Portage Park, you're on with Les Paul.
Steve and Johnny, my heart is pumping just talking to Les. You know, honest to God.
Hi, Dave.
You remember Art Bicetti?
Who?
Art Bicetti. He had a restaurant on Ashland and Irving Park.
What was the restaurant?
Bicetti's.
Art Bicetti. Bicetti's restaurant on Ashland and Irving on the north side of Chicago.
I probably opened and closed that place.
How about the Static Club?
Yeah.
The Static Club and Bill Simmons. Bill Simmons owned the Pit on Rush Street years ago.
Well, we had a lot of places in town that you could go play music and hear music.
Yeah, we used to go by streetcar.
Yeah?
Yeah, we'd get on at Clark Street and go down to Clark Street. We'd just jump off and go in and play.
Wow.
Get on the streetcar with the amp and the guitar. Get off in two blocks and go into another one and play.
Sheridan Road.
Oh, those are precious days.
Yeah.
Sheridan Road and Irving Park.
Wow.
Byron.
Thank you.
Yeah. Dave, did you ever see Les perform at any of these places?
No, I never have.
Oh, just the history. See, I think there's a whole book right there in Les's travels through the joints in Chicago back in the day. Hey, Dave, thanks a lot for calling. We've got to take a quick break and come right back with Les Paul here on 720 WGN.
720 WGN with Steve King and Johnny Putman. That is still, to this day, one of my favorite all-time live recordings made, I believe, in the mid-40s, the first Jazz at the Philharmonic concert with Les on guitar and Nat King Cole on piano. And Les, just the audience reaction to you two going back and forth is wonderful to listen to. That must have been a fun night.
It was a great. I'll never forget it. It was being with Nat Cole is enough.
Mm-hmm.
But to have that audience that involved, it was just great. It was a memorable night.
There's a kind of electricity that you can just hear even all these years later.
Yeah.
In that recording, and that was made on acetate. It's just lucky that recording survived.
It was for the armed forces.
Okay.
Oh.
And I was in uniform, and Meredith told me that I could put a shirt over it and be a civilian for that.
Uh-huh. That was Meredith Wilson?
Mm-hmm. And so we did that. He was called Shorty Nadine, and I was called Paul Leslie.
No. And the way it was recorded, the amazing thing is today you can hear live recordings and you don't really get a sense of the audience. So somehow they had it mic'd brilliantly, so you feel that give and take with you two and the audience.
Yeah. There was only 3 mics used on that whole day.
Oh, my gosh.
And there was 1,000 hats went up when we had that chase.
Oh.
They all, when they mostly got all excited, they threw their hats in the air, standing on the seats, and it was just crazy.
Oh.
Bing called me and says, hey, you got to do that on the craft show.
Uh-huh.
And I says, Bing, it'll never happen again.
Oh.
And we did it on the craft show, and it was nothing.
Yeah. We should explain for people who don't know what Les is referring to when he says a chase. Les would play a line, and then Nat King Cole would try to answer the line, and it just, man, it just cooks in there. So you were just having fun with him, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, he's from Chicago.
Yeah.
And so we used to jam and play in Chicago. Teddy Wilson, Benny Goodman, we were all from Chicago.
Hmm. You mentioned the Kraft show, and earlier we were talking about your television show, the Listerine Show.
Mm-hmm.
Billy emailed us from the western suburbs and said you had a wonderful TV career. Did you ever appear in any movies, Les?
Yes, a couple of them. Sensations of 44 with Eleanor Powell.
Hmm.
And the other one was Freddie Goes to College with Joe Venuti, Wingy Minone, Abe Lyman. It just went on and on with a bunch of great, great players.
That was Joe Goes to College. We've got to find that.
Yeah, we got to find a copy of that someplace. Yes.
Freddie Goes to College, yeah.
Freddie Goes to College.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I said Joe because I probably told you at one time I worked at what was one of the great jazz clubs in Chicago back in the 70s. It was Rick's Cafe Americaine. And one of the wonderful things they did, Les, is they would bring in someone like a Clark Terry for an entire month. Or a Joe Venuti. And so there I was a waitress, and I got to, you know, night after night see these guys. And it was just so, it was an unbelievable experience because a lot of folks would come in and go, wow, I didn't know you were still alive. How cool. You're working every night here. But they had a great crowd, and they still had it, you know. They were still cooking.
You mentioned Clark Terry.
Mm-hmm.
Not only a dear friend, but a great, great player.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, Venuti the same.
Wonderful entertainers, too.
Yeah. Oh, and a funny man.
Yeah, yeah.
I could write a whole book on Joe Venuti.
Really? Can I just say you're also a good tipper, okay?
Yeah.
Which is important when you're putting yourself through school.
Do you remember Franklin McCormick?
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, he used to be on when you're on.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And I used to listen to him and Hollywood and dial them in correct direct from Hollywood. I would just dial in WGN and would call him, and he says, you're kidding me. And he at first did not believe that WGN goes all the way to LA.
Mm-hmm.
That you got a powerful station.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we're very fortunate.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of that, we have people calling in from all over the planet, I think. And let's go to Bill. You wanted to say hi to Les Paul. Hey, Bill.
Oh, this is just a thrill to talk to Les Paul. I remember him when I was a young boy, and his records were played on the radio. And I think, just to be honest with you, I think you inspired me to get into audio recording and that sort of thing years later. And it was always you that I thought, there's the standard by which things are measured. The way you performed your music, the way you put things together on tape, that was such a pioneering effort that you did. But I have no question for Les. It's just a comment that, a little belated, I guess, but a very happy birthday to you, Les. It's nice to see that you're still around. And if you ever get booked into the Chicago Theater, by God, I'm going to be there.
I hope I'm there.
The last time I was in the Chicago Theater, my grandmother took me to see Kitty Callan, the singer.
Years ago.
Well, I'm going to go there again. Even if I have to put a hook in the wall and hang there, I'm going to go.
I'm with you, Bill. So, thanks for listening.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye, Bill.
Thanks a lot, Bill. You know, we got to come up with an excuse to get. I wish we could get you into Chicago in August. We have figured out, I don't know if we told you this, Les, but we figured this August 10th is going to be our 5,000th show on WGN, and we're going to do a special broadcast that night. I wish we could figure out a way to get you in for that.
I'd love to be there.
Yeah.
Maybe I can just drive in and see you.
Just hit your
sure.
ride.
There you go.
Les,
it used to take me 12 hours.
Oh, I doubt it would take you that long now.
Yeah, we've heard stories
yes,
about your driving,
we
Les.
Have.
Yeah, my driving was pretty good. I had a fella stop me, and my brother-in-law said to me, well, this one you're not going to get out of. And so They this pointed helmet, this tall young guy. He says, let's see your driver's license. I says, it's in the trunk. So I open the trunk up, and he says, what's that? I says, I was going to say I got a machine gun in there, but I did say that's my guitar in there.
Uh-huh.
And so he volunteered to tell me that he hated music.
Oh.
And I says, even Hitler liked music. I says, I never heard of anybody who doesn't like music.
Yeah.
He says, I like to fish and hunt, and I don't care at all about music, and I'm writing you out a ticket.
Uh-oh.
And so I say, you got something new there, that's that radar. He says, oddly enough, he says, I got it just today.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, how do you know he didn't have it calibrated yet? And he says, what are you talking about? And I says, why don't you let my brother-in-law drive toward us? He'll go back up. And then he'll come down the highway, and we'll clock him and see whether you're on target or not. He was 8 miles off on the radar, and I took the screwdriver and I adjusted it for him so that it was 70 was 70. And he couldn't thank me enough for adjusting his radar.
So you didn't get the ticket.
And I didn't get the ticket.
And he continued to not like music, but that
and
was
he
okay.
Hates music, yeah.
What a funny story.
The only guy I know in this whole world.
He didn't like music, just your luck.
That's funny. Well, let me jump back to the phones for a second. Again, we never know who's listening and who's calling from where. Down in Nashville, Muriel Anderson. Hey, Muriel.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Muriel.
Hey, Les.
How you doing, doll?
Excellent. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, mine is Saturday, so.
Oh, well, happy
birthday.
Oh,
my goodness. Well, another one, huh?
Yeah, that's right. I always remember.
Well, if I live long enough, we'll be even.
Muriel, we were talking about you last half hour.
Oh, you were?
Yes, we were talking about the All-Star Guitar Night and what an honor it was to be there at the Ryman Auditorium with Les performing with his trio.
Oh, Les was just the top of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It was just an amazing night. And you know, in so many times when I've been in New York and Les and I've seen your show at the Iridium, I'm just amazed time after time. You're just stellar.
Well, I think you've impressed him from time to time, too.
Yep. Thank you, Don.
Oh, yes.
Well, you know, I remember that it was on your show, Steve and Johnny, that I was doing a little live spot, and you said, well, there's a caller on line one.
Uh-huh.
And
right.
It was Les. It was you. And I said, no, it's not really Les Paul.
Right. You'd not met each other.
No. Right. And I didn't believe, Les, that it was really you calling in.
And if I recall correctly, that was the night that Les could tell even over the phone that you were using a capo.
That's right.
And then
my secret is out.
Muriel said, yeah, that was Les Paul.
Yeah.
And then I think you promptly booked a flight to New York so you could go in there and reason with him. And you have since gone into the club and been a guest there many times.
Wasn't it just a couple weeks ago, Les, that Muriel was on the show with you Monday night?
Oh, yeah.
Anytime
Muriel comes to town, she calls and says, is it okay if I come in?
Mm-hmm.
She never has to ask. She just can come in and always welcome.
Oh, thank you.
And Muriel, the pictures that Chris Lenz takes are absolutely priceless when you're there, because I said it the other day. I said, the man doesn't have any wrinkles. And then when there's a woman in the... You could just see the face is just glowing, you know, when there's a woman in the house. Well, Muriel, when you come back home, you got to come by and see us.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I may do that in the next few days.
Good.
Oh, terrific.
Good. Well, then,
I'm coming in for the weekend.
And, of course, folks can see you at MurielAnderson.com and find out where you're performing. So people who are listening all over the country, Muriel is one busy, busy lady.
Well, Muriel, if you're coming in over the weekend, you've got our home phone number. Give us a buzz. Maybe we can get together.
Okay, that'd be great. Yeah, I'm coming in because I just finished a new DVD project that I filmed in Chicago.
Right.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I saw that advertised on your website. We got to talk about that.
In high depth.
Oh, some other time when you don't have Les on the other line. Wow.
Well, Les will appreciate the technology. Muriel's concert was filmed in high definition in HD. And it's supposed to be eye-popping, right, Muriel?
It's one of the first high-def DVDs released.
Yeah, that's cool.
Pretty neat.
Well, speaking of DVDs, before we let you go, Muriel, just had an email from Eddie in Darien wants to know, is there ever going to be a DVD release of the All-Star Guitar Night that Les was featured on in Nashville?
Well, we have the footage, that's a good question. Les, we should go find that footage and see if we can release something. I don't know.
Well, we'll have to
look it up.
Sure.
You know, there's so many shows and just not enough time to put everything together.
Yeah.
But it was a wonderful night.
It was.
It lives in my memory.
Absolutely, Muriel. Thank you so much for checking in.
Thank you.
Give us a buzz when you come up this weekend.
Okay, I love you, Les.
I love you, too.
Thanks, Muriel. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
She's a great performer. She stops that show every time.
She is wonderful.
Yeah.
But by the way, speaking of some of your performances on tape or on DVD, there's a website that you have to check out. I don't know if you're aware of this, Les. The website is called youtube.com. That's youtube.com. And what it is, it's a website where anyone can upload a video. And I did a search the other day for you, and I found some videos from the old Listerine show. I found there was a video, apparently someone was in the audience a year ago at a private concert for your birthday, and they have, it's a wonderful jam. You're doing Sleepwalk
With
Larry Carlton.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be doing.
And it was
beautiful. Yeah, I remember that.
And there's just so if you get the chance, because I know you've got a computer, you ought to check out, do a search for yourself, and it's amazing the stuff you'll find.
Yeah, I should get over to that computer more, but I just don't.
Well, you've got too many other things to worry about.
Yeah, yeah. If I get over to that computer, I get sucked in, and I'll be there for hours.
I've no doubt. And for folks who are just joining us this hour, Les is telling us last hour that he's got the Smithsonian shadowing him this week and working on a documentary. And you yourself have the wheels turning because you want to get out a bluegrass album and a jazz album, and you got all kinds of projects in the works. But DDE emailed, and Dee Dee wants to know if you still enjoy a cold beer and a bowl of popcorn.
Well, that's the two things I've lived for. I have it almost every night. But it's non-alcoholic beer that I drink.
Right.
And it's called Texas Delight, Texas Select beer. And they didn't have it up here at the ShopRite shopping store. And so I went over and asked the manager, and he says, we never heard of it, but we'll see that it's here starting next week.
Hmm.
Well, terrific.
And so we got the beer in. In the meantime, I had talked to him down there, and they says, we're sending you beer for the rest of your life. And then all of a sudden, I got the beer in at the store, and I called them and told them, so they quit sending me the beer.
Oh, dear.
So I says, I'm not as bright as I should be.
I think Dee Dee's probably looking for the answer to a question many people have. So how, you know, what keeps you going at 91 years old? And I can see it now. Dee Dee's popping a top and making up some popcorn. If that's the secret, we're all going to do that.
I think the secret is to want to play and to meet new people, play for the old people, to have a good time, surround yourself with the great musicians that you're privileged to play with, and to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's better than trying to lay in bed and say, I'm going to make it to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of that being your chore is just to get the next room, it's to say, Monday night I'm going to go down and play, and I'm going to hear that applause. I'm going to make a lot of people happy and meet a lot of new friends and that kind of thing. And it works.
But, yeah. And we can see
you have to have a goal.
We can see on your face every week, because literally every Monday night we go to Chris Lenz's website and we see just the smile on your face, and and we can see what you're talking
about. Best medicine in the world.
I hate to do this, Les, but we have to break for the news, but I want to ask you, I don't want to impose on you, but if you can hang with us, our lines are absolutely jammed up with people who want
to
talk to you.
Do it.
Okay.
Okay.
We're not going to keep you up all night. We promise you that.
All right.
So.
You're doing that, but that's good.
Okay. Well, we love you. We don't want to wear out our welcome.
This is kicks.
Okay. Well, rest your ear, and those of you hanging on the line, we promise we'll get to you. We'll hush up for a few minutes and let you all sneak in your questions for Les Paul coming up here on 720 WGN.
720 WGN with Steve King and Johnny Putman, and that's a bit of an album that absolutely belongs in your collection. I don't care what kind of music you like. That's Les Paul and Chet Atkins together in just an extraordinary meeting of, I almost said superheroes, but I guess that's right. I'll go for that. Les, every time I listen to that, one of the things that amazes me about that, and it's one of the things that I've loved about you for years, not just your playing, but your tone. It is just so distinctive.
Well, thank you. That's the thing I'm concerned about most.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, is that one of the reasons why, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe to this day, and guitar geeks will know where I'm going with this, you still use low impedance pickups, right?
It doesn't have anything to do with it.
Really?
Took a pickup Monday night. I took a guitar Monday night that they just gave me, an Epiphone Les Paul, and I played it, and you can't tell the difference.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I know for a long time you were really, as I understood it, more in favor of the low impedance pickups.
Oh, I am.
Okay.
But that's because of RF noise and technical things to do with noise versus sound, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, maybe what you just said kind of leads us to one of the people who had emailed us.
That's right. Jason is a guitarist, and he is a proud owner of a Les Paul Standard, but it's a new one. So he was wondering if you could explain if there are any major differences between the guitar that he owns today and the guitar that came out in 1952.
Oh, yes, there is. Mm-hmm. And they're all improvements.
Really?
Yes, they're better. In fact, the last guitar that I got was last Monday. I got four of them to evaluate. And I called the Gibson president and said they better watch out because the guitars they're making now are superior to anything they've ever made.
Mm.
And they were from Epiphone, made in China.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And that is really a surprise.
Wow.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't Gibson now have a plant that they own in China? And basically, they.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the standards we're setting are higher. I've designed a new one that I gave to Gibson, and they're making it out of it. They're going to be shipping it to me next Friday
mm-hmm.
With some very obvious improvements, and we hope they are all for the better. But we're constantly working on a better guitar.
Now, Les, with all of the different Les Paul Gibson guitars, there's the standard and the classic and the studio and
on and on.
On and on and on. Is Jason correct in saying that the standard would be the closest to the one that debuted for Gibson back in the 50s?
No, I think that, well, wait a minute. Yes, to answer your question, it has changed because of electronically that we've come along quite a ways in isolating, again, noise interference,
mm-hmm.
and to get more fidelity, so they learn how to wind the coils, to humbuck the hums out,
mm-hmm.
To get less interference, to get higher level, and to get the sound that sounds more like what you just heard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's hard to do without making a special recording guitar like I'm playing.
Hmm.
Right.
And we're getting closer to it and closer to it. And this new one that I'm having made, I'm hoping that it's far superior to any of the others.
Is it going to have a particular name like the standard or custom or anything like that?
We don't know yet. First, we want to evaluate it mm-hmm. and find out what we have. And the same way with an amplifier. I'm constantly talking to them about making a Les Paul amplifier to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
That would be far superior to what you just go into the store and get today.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've run into the problem where we're 50 years doing the same thing, all of us, not just one, just not our guitar, but our competitors the same way. They've fallen into, well, this is the way it is. And so I am now working with IBM, and I'm working with their staff of scientists, physicist.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing is we're going in deep to improving the sound of the way the guitar is picked up to begin with.
Hmm.
To make a better instrument, okay, instead of part of the sound, all of the sound.
Hmm.
And so we're well on our way of making some very fine improvements.
Wow.
I'm not just saying this because you're on the phone, but one of the finest guitars that I've ever played is the beautiful black Les Paul Custom that you autographed and that Johnny gave me for a Christmas present back in 96.
That's as fine as you can get.
Man, I love that guitar, and the tone on that, it's just... And I told Johnny, after she surprised me with it for a Christmas present, normally... A guitar player wants to pick out, wants to pick out their own guitar. I couldn't have picked out a guitar any more perfect than this one. It is absolutely a wonderful guitar.
I got to tell you, as the roadie, the downside to a Les Paul guitar is they're so darn heavy.
You know? Yeah, we're making them lighter, too.
Oh,
now.
Good. Because, you know, me hauling an amplifier.
We'll call it Johnny, right?
That's right. You know, I'm hauling that amplifier and that guitar and trying to bring it up from Lower Wacker Drive up the stairs to Michigan Avenue. That hurts.
Oh,
but at least it's not an accordion.
At least. Well, see, I'd leave that down on Lower Wacker Drive. drive if I had my accordion.
Oh, my goodness. That poor accordion.
Yes. Just a couple more minutes with Les, because he's got a busy, busy schedule, and people have been waiting patiently to just reminisce with you. Laureen from Crystal Lake, you have a question about Les's love of music, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll never be the same after this. You know?
Me either. Come on.
I'm 88 years old. Am I too old to learn to play the guitar?
Never.
Never.
Never. Okay. I have to ask you
just enjoy
just quickly.
It. Play.
Okay. How did you start being musical? Are you from a musical family or what?
No, I'm not from a musical family. It just was something that I was attracted to from the first time I heard music. I just loved it and went that way. And
your mother was incredibly supportive.
Oh, yeah, she encouraged me. She saw that it's something that you're blessed with and you go with it.
And that's what's kept you young.
Oh, yeah. Who would think of getting up and going to work if they hated it?
Yeah.
The fact that you love what you're doing. It is not work. It's a privilege. It's a lot of fun.
One of my sons was in University of Illinois. We went down to your concert at University of Illinois in Champaign. Mm-hmm. I don't know what year that was, but we'll never forget. They're still talking about it.
Oh.
Because music is important in my family.
Yeah, and there was Mary Ford with him at the time?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh,
see, now Les remembered that. He said Mary and I were there.
Yeah. Oh, that was fantastic.
Important. Yeah. That. And again, Lorraine, I feel so happy when Les reiterates the importance of doing something you love, because Les, and Lorraine, you've probably heard us tease about it on the air before. People will call in and say, oh, I made it to the phone. You know, I'm 61 years old. Mm-hmm. And we go, oh, just stop it now.
Yeah, is there any way that
I hear so many people say, you know, I'm going to be able to retire in a couple of months.
And
then I can just lay around.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh,
and you lay around and dry up and blow away.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
and here at 91, I can't wait till next Monday to go in and play some more.
Yeah. Oh, golly. Lorraine, thank you very much
thanks
for
love,
checking
Lorraine.
In.
Brian, you're on WGN with Les Paul.
Yeah, Steve and Johnny, pleasure to hear from you guys again.
Hello.
Mr. Paul, an honor to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather just turned 96.
Mm-hmm.
He was in World War II in Burma.
Mm-hmm.
He won't talk about the war, but he gives me a word of advice that the only way to make it through life is Les Paul, Frank Sinatra, and a Heineken a day.
And a Heineken a day.
He's got it. Very good.
That's the title of the book, Brian.
Your grandfather sounds like a very cool guy, Brian.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Good company.
That's great, Brian. Yeah, you're in good company, right? And Les is thinking, is it the Heineken or is it Sinatra? I'm not so sure. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Hey, Les, real quick, want to ask you something. We were talking at the outset of the conversation about you being a night owl. And how Sinatra was a night owl too, and liked to record that way.
Yeah.
And I had an email from Gary in Lake Villa, wanted to know, speaking of night owls, Elvis Presley was notoriously a night owl. Did you ever meet Elvis Presley? I don't think we've ever asked you that.
Oh, really?
When?
And we had quite a few talks, and we'd sit on the fender of a car in between the recordings, and then we'd go over to another studio to record some more. And he was just a great guy. We had a lot of fun together. My brother-in-law did Sinatra, did Elvis, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and Bob Newhart. Well, those were the four people that he recorded.
Really?
Yep. So my brother-in-law, who got his learning right here and prior to here, he was born on Damon Avenue. Went to the same school I did. We were buddies until he died in my arms.
And you, what was your brother-in-law's name?
Wally. Wally Kamen.
Of course, yeah. In fact, there are pictures of Wally in the
book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wally was a dear man, and he had the privilege of playing for the recording, mastering for the four top people.
Wow.
You know, and so it was great because you get to talk with Sinatra a lot and mm-hmm. talk with Elvis a lot. And they're very interesting people and very nice. And by the way, got a very nice letter from Frank just before he died, which I told you on a show, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that I didn't want to write him a letter with him being that ill. Mm-hmm. And so I sent him a real bad guitar I had. And I said, if he can't tune it, call me.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent him this hunk of junk. And he had it over his mantle. And when he passed away, there it was. He loved it, and so he wrote a letter to the Kennedy Center, and he said in there, if it wasn't for Les Paul, we wouldn't have multi-track recording. We wouldn't be able to make the records we're making today. And he wrote all kinds of very nice things. This is Frank, just before he passed away.
Oh, boy.
And that letter is so important to me.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I can see why it would be. Well, speaking of multi-track recording and all the things that you invented, let me go to Mark in Aurora. Mark, I believe you had a question about some of the things Les invented?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he was on an interview, the Fresh Air program with Terry Gross, and I recall that he was very... Terry Gross.
Mm-hmm.
I recall that he was very taken with her comment about his... physical injuries and how he's overcome them, and what she said was, you know, you've kind of reinvented your physical self the way you've invented other things. And I remember that Les just loved that comment, and so I wanted to ask him about his inventions. I've read your book, and besides the musical history, I also read it because I was fascinated with the process of invention, and I really appreciate the photographs in the book because you can see the first multi-track head with its layers, the magnetic layers in it. And Les, I have to read with a magnifier, and so it took me a week to get through the book, and I loved it, and I had to treat my forearm as a kind of rack and pinion assembly because I had to move the book up and down on my forearm to read it line by line. But I wanted to know, do you have any conscious awareness of how you do your creative process when you invent something? Is it similar to songwriting, or does each creative process have its own way that it works?
No, it just comes to me.
Really?
Yeah, it's something I don't say, well, I got to invent something and start thinking of things that we don't have that I should invent. I don't do that. What happens is that I'll say, well, there isn't one around, so I'll make one. And so it came to me when Bing Crosby brought the first tape machine over to me that was Ampex made for Bing. Bing bought one, and we lifted it out of his car and brought it in the backyard, and Bing turned around and says, have fun. And Mary was doing the laundry, hanging it up in the backyard. And I said, Mary, forget the laundry. We're heading for Chicago right now. And she says, what's happening? I says, I just invented a sound-on-sound recording. And I had just written it out on an envelope. I didn't even open the case. So I just, and Mary said, New Mexico, said to me, but what if it doesn't work? By the time we got to the, couldn't wait for Ampex to send me a fourth head. I just said, I need a fourth head. So they sent me one. And so I went around the corner on Broadway and Argyle, there, or Lawrence, and found an old friend of mine that had a drill. And I said, drill the holes here, and we'll thread them. We'll mount the head, put it on, and lo and behold, I says, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing, 1, 2, this is Mary Ford, this is Mary Ford. Both of them were on there. I threw my crutches in the air, and we danced. and Mary and I, it worked. And that's where the multiple recording, the sound on sound, where you could do one or more parts, you could go, we went up to 28.
Wow. Do you recall which song you did 20
years ago? Yeah, one never released, Night and Day.
Oh,
no kidding.
It's yet to be released, yeah.
How much stuff have you got that you've never released?
Oh, tons. Tons. That's the Library of Congress is coming here tomorrow to look at all the stuff that hasn't been released.
Wow.
And the outtakes.
Well, the fun thing is when you see some of these wonderful pictures in this group.
By the way, the book we're talking about is, oddly enough, I was looking at the book just yesterday morning. It's Les Paul in His Own Words, put out by Russ Cochran Publishing. It is a wonderful book, Les. It really is.
And the pictures. The pictures are so great, and the pictures will haunt me forever because Steve says, see, Les keeps everything. Look at this picture.
I do, Les. I'm not kidding. Like,
we can't walk through the house.
It's a beautiful junk.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Les has 38 rooms. You know, we've got 8, honey. You've got to clean up.
Hey, you guys, do you know that I've hogged this thing now for 2 hours?
Well, we have hogged up your time, and bless you for spending time with us. It has been such a treat for not only for us, but for our listeners, Les. We've had more email and phone calls from people who are just
you
so thrilled.
You guys are so good to me.
Oh,
thank
golly.
You.
You're the best, Les. And I really hope at some point we can con you into sneaking back into
what
Chicago.
You know, we may just come out and get you in August and drive you back here for our big 5,000 show. We may come kidnap
you.
You
both are great.
Oh, thank you, Les. We love you dearly, and thank you so much for your time.
And I love the audience, too. The Midwest is where I want to go.
Yes, we want you here, too. Thank
you.
Hey,
listen, before we let you go, please tell Russ we said hi and hope he's doing okay.
I will. I'll go right in and tell it.
All righty. Take care, buddy.
Thanks a million,
Les.
Bye-bye, Les. God bless.
Bye-bye.
That's Les Paul, and
what a
special man he is. I don't apologize if it sounds like I'm gushing when we get the chance to talk to Les Paul. He is such a special man, not just the things that he's done for the recording industry or the things he's invented, but as a person. We're so lucky to be alive on the planet at the same time. Mm-hmm. Les Paul is. He's just such a cool guy, and we're so proud to call him a friend.
I tell you, I'm going to start this Cool Guy Hall of Fame and make him the chairman. I mean, he's in every other Hall of Fame. So.
But again, one of the things, and I know I harangue about this, and I don't apologize for that either. 91 years old,
mm-hmm.
And yes, Les remembers and has tremendous affection for his past, but he's looking forward to next Monday night,
yeah,
and he's looking forward to the next album he's going to do, and the next thing he's going to do.
And as he said, you know, he stops and wonders when people say, oh boy, I'm going to retire and just get to lay around, and you just turn to dust and blow away.
Yeah.
You know? So there's
I want to find out about this new guitar that he's talking about.
Yeah.
What he's added to this. And he's, you know, as much as I'm a huge fan of American-made products, I totally understand what Les is saying with some of the products that are coming from China. And this is a factory that Gibson set up in China, and they took the Gibson molds,
mm-hmm.
and the Gibson techniques, and I believe Gibson is the first American manufacturer to actually own a manufacturing complex, mm-hmm. in China. So there are a lot of the Epiphone things are made there, and some of the Gibson things, and then a lot of the Gibson things are made in this country too. But I absolutely agree, some of the best products, you know, you talk about the golden age of guitar making, I think it's right now.
Mm.
There are just some of the best stuff going on right now that I've ever seen. And
so that means you need to keep getting more.
Well,
is that it?
She got it.
I did.
I figured if I kept talking long enough, she would get it.
Eventually.
The birthday's coming up in a couple months.
Right. So subtle.
Subtlety is my middle name.
Mm-hmm.